Welcome to Our Story, Your Story, the video podcast where we share our personal experiences and invite you to share yours. We are Toby Eunice and Shelley Carney, and together we'll take you on a journey through our lives and the lives of our family, friends, and guests. We believe that everyone has a story to tell, and we can all learn from each other's experiences. So whether you're looking for inspiration, entertainment, or simply a good story, you've come to the right place. Hello, and welcome to Our Story, Your Story. I'm Shelley Carney.
And I'm Toby Eunice. Thanks for joining us.
Tonight, we're going to be diving into Chapter 16, Hamburger Stand.
Hamburger Stand.
Yeah. Remember, we are following Miguel across Texas. He just left where he had been pulled over by the deputy sheriff in a small town in the Garza County area.
West of Central Texas.
And he's been riding for the rest of the day, and it's getting late, and he's getting hungry.
And he needs to find a place to crash.
Yeah, not crash.
Back then it was called crashing.
But you're riding a motorcycle. You don't want to crash.
Don't want to crash.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's dive into that. Are you ready?
Yeah, whenever you are.
It has been a long day's ride. I'm tired and hungry. The sun is setting behind me, and although I don't necessarily want to ride in the dark, I do want to go as far as I can before getting something to eat and setting up camp for the night. My camp consists of half of a pup tent tied up to the motorcycle and a surplus military sleeping bag. Dinner plans include opening a can of beans and eating them cold with a spoon. Fortunately for me, one of the small farming and ranching towns that populate this part of Central Texas appears ahead. I want to treat myself to a hamburger, some fries, and a vanilla shake. It shouldn't take any more time than stopping to sort through my belongings and open a can of beans, and a hot meal will be much more enjoyable. Besides, I think of the beans as emergency rations for the times when nothing better is available or if money is tight. It takes me just a minute to ride through town, and as I near the far side, I pick up on the aroma of what I hope is a hamburger stand and not just a local family's backyard barbecue. Up ahead on the right, I spot a white building with blue trim and a sign out front, Billy Bob's Burger Shack. It might be a good time for me to make friends with good old Billy Bob. There are a couple of picnic tables to one side of Billy Bob's Burger Shack. I stop the bike at the second one and dismount. I take off my goggles, cap, and jacket and stretch long enough to release the vibration of the ride from my body. Standing there, I notice two windows on the front of the building. One reads, "Order Here," and the other, "Pickup Here." I sidle up to the "Order Here" window and hear a woman's voice, with a soft Central Texas drawl, call out from the "Pickup Here" window. "Hey, sweetie, you can save us both a little trouble if you come on over here."
Can you do a Central Texas drawl?
Yeah, that wasn't one.
It's got a little bit more twang to it.
More twang.
Try that line again with your Central Texas drawl.
"Hey, sweetie, you can save us both a little trouble if you come on over here."
Okay, well, this is that? No, that's a little over the top. But
over the top.
Yeah. Okay. Somewhere in between.
In between.
Yeah.
Hungry enough not to argue, I turn for that window instead. The counter at the window is just above belt height, so I have to bend over to communicate with the woman taking my order. From the inside, she slides back a screen, and I can see she is leaning on her elbows on her side of the counter. Pen in hand, she's ready to take my order and write it down on a green receipt pad, the kind waitresses use to document an order. But before I can speak a word, she looks up in my direction, and I am caught off guard by the color and size of her beautiful eyes. They are different from anything I've ever seen before. The setting sun turns them golden. She waits long enough to be polite, and, polite no more, asks, "So, what do you want, hon?" "Yes, ma'am. I'd like a hamburger, an order of fries, and a vanilla shake. What do you want on that burger? Lettuce, tomato, ketchup, and mustard. You want cheese on that? Yes, please. I pay for my order and tuck the change back into my pocket. All right, go sit over there by your bike and I'll call you when it's ready. I do as instructed and contemplate not only her eyes, but the rest of her as well. She seems to be in her late 30s, early 40s, dark blonde hair piled on top of her head in a wild way, demonstrating the long day of work she'd had. She is wearing a white waitress uniform with blue trim, which fits her slim, shapely body nicely, displaying her youthful curves. I take the time while waiting to check the oil, the gas, and my canteen. The only one that needs refreshing is the canteen. I plan to ask her to do that for me after I eat my dinner. A few minutes later, she comes out the side door, a bag in one hand and my vanilla shake in the other. She moves toward me and announces, "I need a little break, so I thought I'd come on out and sit with y'all for a bit, if that's okay." I gesture to the bench and nod, then sit down on the other side of the picnic table. She hands me the bag and I tear it open so I can use it as a placemat for my meal. I dump out the paper container of fries next to the brown paper-wrapped burger. Unwrapping the burger, I sip my vanilla shake, which I believe is the best vanilla shake I've ever tasted. There is a small plastic nameplate over the fake handkerchief in the fake pocket of her waitress uniform. Lizette. She notices me staring at her chest and out loud pronounces, "Lizette." A little embarrassed at being caught staring, I respond, "I wondered how to pronounce it. Lizette, that's a pretty name. I've never heard it before." "Thank you." She nods as she removes a pack of cigarettes and a matchbook from a pocket on the front of her apron. She gives the pack a little flick, causing one of the cigarettes to pop partway out of the pack and offers it to me. I hold up my hand and shake my head. "No, thank you." Without a word, she takes the cigarette herself and lights it. She takes a deep draw, tilts her head back, and blows the smoke into the gentle breeze that is coming from behind me. It is carried off into the Texas Hill Country. My name is Miguel. It only seems fair to introduce myself since I'm not wearing a name tag. Lizette taps a bit of ash off her cigarette. "Nice to meet you, Miguel." "This is a very good hamburger," I comment, holding it up in her direction. "Yep, that's what Billy Bob's is known for. Best burgers in Central Texas. Happy to hear you like it." "I'd appreciate it if you'd tell Mr. Billy Bob that I think he makes a pretty good burger." "Well, sweetie, I can't do that. Mr. Billy Bob had a heart attack a couple of years ago while he was standing over the deep fryer. Took me a minute to pull him out before he got deep fried himself. Turns out, he left me the hamburger stand in his will. It didn't make his wife very happy, but he left her a good chunk of change, so she didn't complain too much." I'm sorry to hear that," I say as sincerely as I can. She looks me over for a couple of silent seconds before asking, "How old are you, sweetie?" Over the next several minutes, I tell her the same story I had told everyone on this trip, this time adding in the bits about the Vatos and Deputy Lufkin. She lets the stiffness out of her body and relaxes. Her unforgettable eyes fill with sadness, and for a moment, I think maybe they are tearing up. When I finish my story, she drops the cigarette to the ground and puts it out with the sole of her shoe. She turns back and stares at me before saying anything. "I guess I'll never understand you men, but like they say, each man is the architect of his own fate." Although I have an inkling of what she means, I look at her in a way that implies I don't. So she explains. "It means when you get things in your head, like this trip you just have to take to see the Mardi Gras all the way out in New Orleans, for goodness sake." Lizette smacks her hand against the table in agitation. "And I suppose it makes sense to you, but it sure don't make sense to anyone else. I'll bet it don't make no sense to your mama either." A twinge of guilt spikes through me for the first time since leaving St. Michael's. I stoically squash it as flat as Tweety. My mother doesn't need to understand the sense of my journey. I doubt she would even care to try. She has her own very full life. She's busy with work, my siblings, her hair appointments, and her friends. She has no time to worry about me. Lizette watches the play of emotions across my face and comes to her own silent conclusions. She puts her hands on top of the picnic table, pushing herself to her feet. She steps over the bench on her side and stops to ask, "Where y'all spending the night?" "I've got a tent and a sleeping bag. I was going to ask if you wouldn't mind me camping out behind your building overnight." She pauses for a moment, thinking, before saying, "Oh, hell no. You're coming home with me. Give me a few minutes to close up here. No use you spending the night in a tent when I've got a perfectly good spare bed at my house. It's just about a mile down the road over there." She nods her head in the direction of her house, and I follow it to see the dirt road that she is indicating. Like others I had passed, it heads off perpendicular to the main road toward one of the ranches or farms that dot the area. She walks back to the burger stand saying, "Get your gear together. I'll be done here in a minute." I'm not about to argue for two reasons. First, it sounds a lot better than sleeping on the ground behind a burger stand. And second, I have a sense that it would be like arguing with my mother. I will not win. I get ready to ride, and a few minutes later, I hear the sound of a heavy metal door in the back of the building opening and closing. A minute later, she drives around to where I'm standing over the bike. She leans over to the right side of her truck and rolls down the window, saying, "Just follow me, sweetie, but not too close. That dirt road will kick up a lot of dust." I start the bike and pop it into gear as she rolls up the window. Lizette drives home and I follow her. She turns onto the dirt road and I slow down to get a little distance between us. Sure enough, the truck throws up a cloud of dust, and it is exaggerated by the cone of light coming from the motorcycle's headlamp. The road is relatively smooth and easy to navigate. Before long, I'm turning into the driveway of a small but well-cared-for Central Texas ranch house. The driveway is paved with brick, and there are lawns in both front and back. The backyard holds a medium-sized but empty above-ground pool and a king-sized barbecue grill. She pulls to a stop in front of the garage at the end of the driveway. I ride my bike to one side of the truck, come to a stop, turn the bike off, and set it up on its kickstand. She follows a brick sidewalk to a concrete porch and unlocks the door to her house. She gestures for me to follow, saying, "Well, come on, ain't nothing in here to be scared of." I take my personals kit out of one of the saddlebags and follow her into the house. So, a new thing happened. Like, I like this story because, like, now it's going to happen. Oh, now it's going to happen. Yeah. So, kind of got halfway through this story. We know there's more coming because he's just about to go into the house and begin some kind of a relationship with this woman.
I'm not sure I would call it a relationship.
Well, if you're spending the night at somebody's house, then that's kind of an intimate thing, but we'll get into that next week. Uh-huh. Let's start with this week, the hamburger stand. Obviously, somebody's going to prefer a hot meal if they can find one on the road, especially if they think they're going to have to spend the night outdoors when it's February. It's cold. I mean, it's Texas, but it still gets cold.
And then there's the perennial search for potties.
Yeah.
That was back before rest stops.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So you had to find yourself a convenient place to do your business. So having a bathroom was a great addition to.
Yeah. So were you surprised that she asked you to spend the night at her house and offered you a bed?
Yeah. I think it was more than surprised. Shocked. Like, you don't even know me. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know who I am. I could be just another nut job coming down the road. Now, I don't give out that appearance, but here I am on the road, you know, And I'm always cautious when I see somebody that just seems to be a little bit loose, like, well, why are you riding that bike in that direction kind of thing? Mm-hmm. So it was interesting to me that she had whatever courage it would take to offer a place to sleep to a complete stranger. And that place to sleep happened to be in her house. Now, we both know how this story goes and how it happened. So it's a lot less risky for both of us. But the reality is there's risk on both sides. I mean, she could have been, you know, and I'm sure, I don't know whether it ran through her head, but what ran through my head is maybe she just collects teenage boys and after she's done with them, she buries them in her backyard out here in the middle of Central Texas where nobody's ever going to find you or care about you. Because at that point, had she been that kind of individual, which she wasn't, obviously, but had she been that kind of individual, Toby Unis would have disappeared off the face of the planet. And there wouldn't have been anything anybody could do about it. You mm-hmm. know, it would just been one of those things where my mother would have searched for, I don't know, 5 or 6 days and then gone on with the rest of her life, you know.
I don't think back then there were that many stories about that sort of thing happening.
No, that's because they weren't covered. There were just as many stories then as there are now. There's no difference in the numbers.
Women feared men more than men feared women. And you, at that point, are a young man and she's mm-hmm. a woman. Mm-hmm. So it would seem socially that she should be more afraid than you would be. But you were both similar in social standing and, you know, race, creed, color, all of that. Mm-hmm. So you're very similar in those ways. So it wasn't uneven, too uneven.
So there were two things that occurred as a result of the interaction that we had, the initial interaction. And that was, up to that point, I had led a life in which none of the women in my life were any kind of evil. They were sisters, they were mothers, they were aunts, they were neighbors, they were associates of the various clubs, they were friends of my mother's. And I don't remember thinking to myself, oh, this woman is just terrible. I never met my teacher. I think the whole time I was in up until St. Mike's, I had nuns, right? So my perspective of women was that they were all basically good people, you know, that they wouldn't do you harm. I had one lay teacher, an English teacher at St. Mike's, that honestly, I feel guilty now because we just used to bring her to tears every class. So none of the women in my life from birth to this point in my life had ever indicated that women had any kind of evil in them. I naturally trusted them. So that was the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened was the conversation was a conversation of card playing. And I don't know what the name of that game is, not poker, but there's a game where you lay down a card and somebody tries to beat your card. I don't know what it is.
I think it's war.
Yeah, something like that. So we were each laying down our card. You know, I'm here on my own and I'm coming from such and such. And, well, I have a place. So we were both, I don't think either of us were cautious, but I think we were not cautious because it seems to me, number one, my experience with women had been all positive up until that point. There was no women that had beat me in my entire life, right? Nor did I expect them to. I trusted women implicitly. And the second thing is I got the sense that there were no men in her life that had treated her in a way where she would be fearful of men's behaviors. So that part of it, where our previous experience was motivating us into this, as you called it, relationship. And the second thing is we were playing these cards. So I just want a hamburger. You like your hamburger? You know, where are you going to stay? I'm going to stay out back.
Can
I have out back?
Your story.
Right. Yeah. So I think it was a combination of those things that left us both with a level of comfort that for both of us, this was not a bad decision. You know, this was not going to be a place of danger or hurt or pain or any of that business. And I think that's what made it so easy for each of us to do what we did and not be surprised by any of it. You know, mm-hmm. I said I was shocked. It wasn't the shock of, holy does this always happen like this? You know, as Jared, as your son said, nothing bad happens to the guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's too easy.
Yeah. It's too easy. And there was a lot of reasons for that. Number one, I wasn't causing trouble. I wasn't going out of my, I didn't hold her up. I didn't tell her hamburger was terrible. I wasn't being evil and mean, nor were any of these people. I mean, I was with the sheriff who started out being a sheriff, but by the time it was done, he was just a dad, you know? So I think that had a lot to do with it, and it made it very comfortable for both of us. You're walking into a stranger's house, and that stranger is having you as a stranger walk into their house. So there's some dynamics, some energy dynamics going on there, where you're trying not to make a mistake that's going to scare her. You know, you're not going to go to the knife drawer and start rifling through the knife drawers, something like that. Yeah. You're just trying to be a gentleman, young gentleman about it. You've been taught to be a young gentleman at that point in your life. So you didn't have to work really hard at being Toby, and she didn't have to work really hard at being Lisette. So I think that all helped and made it that much easier. And there was the benefit of not having to sleep on the ground in a government issue, a GI issue sleeping bag, and a GI issue half a pup tent.
Yeah.
Canvas pup tent.
All right. So I think the theme of this one was compassion, because first she made you a meal, because that was her job, of course, but then she came out and checked on you and talked with you and listened to your story. And then after she heard your story, she cared enough to ask, where are you going to spend the night? You know, what comes next for you? Uh-huh. And when you told her what you were doing, she thought about that and said, no, that's not good enough for this kid. He needs better. And I'm going to give him something better. I'm going to give him a place to stay overnight, because he's on his way the next morning. She knew that. She knew you weren't like moving to town or anything. So she showed empathy, thinking, if I or a family member of mine was out on a road trip and they were going to spend the night, I would hope that somebody would, you know, offer them this, this comfort, this warmth, you know, a warm place to stay overnight. Uh-huh. So compassion and empathy is the theme of this chapter, is what I felt. What do you think?
So I felt I agree with you to a certain extent. Because I don't think I got to pay back the compassion, the sense of, right now it's trust, mutual trust, right? That's what I felt. I wouldn't call it I think you're right in saying that the theme of the chapter is compassion and empathy. The undertone is trust. Because of her compassion and empathy, I was placed in a position where I didn't have the opportunity to express that. But as we see in the next chapter, I get that opportunity. To repay the compassion and empathy that she showed in this initial interaction, but I think that's a good way to describe it. Is you have a sense, you leave this chapter with a sense that these are good people being good to each other. And there's nothing better in life than seeing people that are good to each other. You know, Instagram and TikTok have both noticed that when they show me videos of people doing things for other people, that they're going to get a like out of me. The one that they showed me today was a short video taken by someone on a subway train of an older man, an older woman, and an older man. And they noticed there was a young black man sitting across from them. And he was trying to tie his tie, and he couldn't. He didn't have a mirror, and he probably had never done that. They started talking with him, and he told them that he was going to an interview, and he wanted to look as good as he could. And the woman said, "Are you having trouble with your tie?" He said, "Yes." And they both cross the train, And she stands in front of them to block what they're doing from the rest of the people in the subway. And the older gentleman ties the tie for him. TikTok knows I'm a sucker for this.
Those people, as should we all be. Yeah,
people showing kindness to other people without regard for who they are or where they come from or what their politics is. Just goodness and kindness. And I think it's one of the things I'm not gonna judge and say it's one of the things we lack in this world. I think there's a lot of it. I think we're just so caught up in what we have to get done on any given day. Yeah. We don't notice it. And I think it was situations like that that caused me to as I don't want to say grow up, but as I got older, to not necessarily seek out those opportunities. But if I noticed an opportunity where I could be of help to someone, I would do it without the expectation that I was going to get paid or rewarded or thanked or anything, just to be able to do it. And I don't even ask, you know, make sure you pay it forward. There's no kind of payment involved. It's like, you can help someone. Why not?
Yeah.
And that's what I felt was happening here.
Well, and like you always say, you're adding into your karma.
Yeah.
Your bank of
karma.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I'm a firm believer that if you find opportunities to do good, whatever it happens to be. I told you what I did with the children's school materials that we were asked to bring to last night's New Mexico gold miners meeting. They just said, we're paying them tonight. Usually we bring canned food. They asked if we were to bring school supplies instead. And so I went over to Walmart and I thought to myself, I haven't bought school supplies since my kids were kids, you know? And so I just went down that aisle. It wasn't quite that thing where people are throwing things into the basket as they're driving down the thing. But I probably went overboard just because I felt like I don't get an opportunity this often to have, you know, to provide for someone else that may not have these things. And so I made sure they got plenty of supplies that would help them on the art side, right? And then I bought a box of 100 erasers, and they were meant for the teacher. And each eraser had a little reward on it, like, wow, you get a wow eraser, or you get a good job eraser. And I thought that was really a good idea. And it was like $4.99, you know, 4.9 cents per eraser for something like that. So it made me feel, and it was one of those things when I laid it down at the meeting, I felt like, okay, that goes into the credit side of my karma, you know, bank account. And I didn't do it because of that. I didn't do it for karma. I didn't do it because somebody was going to say, wow, that's a lot of school supplies. I did it because A, I could, and B, because I wanted to. And I think those are the two important components that flow out of compassion and any empathy. I can do something. I can do it. And I want to do it. And all the other stuff is, and I don't expect that anybody's going to cheer me for it, you know. And there should be more of that in the world.
Yeah.
And for us retired people, I think we have a lot of opportunities to perform in a way that is both compassionate and empathetic. And we should take advantage of that, not only for the other people, but for ourselves. I think there's a positive energy that comes with that, that helps you stand up a little taller, a little straighter, and feel a little bit better about yourself. Because there's a lot of people in the world who don't want you to feel good about yourself. You know, they're trying to just watch the news, you know.
Yeah, so, and I agree with you about the whole, you know, people get too busy and they just, you know, can't find the time. There's somebody that I was put in touch with before Kevin passed. And this person said, you know, oh, call me, I'll help you, anything you need. And then I did, and I called them, and they were like, yeah, I can kind of, I'm kind of busy, but I'll try. And, you know, and then and I've since called this person one or two more times, and each time they tell me about how busy they are and how they don't have time to call me back. And it gets to the point where I'm just like, why did you offer?
Right.
You know, so don't offer unless you really mean it and you really plan to come through on what you're offering, you know, really come through. Otherwise, it's just, you know, lip service. It's just, you know, words, empty words that aren't helpful. Because if this person had said, well, you know, I can help you with this thing, but then I can't help you anymore after that because I've got this other thing, but maybe I can introduce you to somebody else who could help you or whatever it is. But, you know, I don't know who to reach out to anymore because this person said they're too busy. So now who do I reach out to, you know? So, and then I wonder, you know, were the people at the funeral also just saying things, but they didn't really mean them, or should, you know, because I can reach out to them, but they come back with, well, I'm just too busy, or I don't, you know, I can't do that for you. Then, you know, you can begin to wonder, why did you tell me you wanted to help when I come to you and you don't? So really mean it. Really follow through or don't offer. I think that's, you know, the offering is making them feel better about themselves. But when I ask them for that help and then they can't come through on it, then what?
So I've thought about this before this conversation. Mm-hmm. And there's two conclusions I've come to about the expression of compassion and empathy and or empathy. And that is, they are in the present. There is no future compassion and empathy. You know, call me when you get a chance. Either it is expressed in the present, or it's just a promise that may or may not come because we get too busy. So if there's an opportunity to express compassion and empathy for someone else, do it in the present. Do it now. And do it without the expectation that there's going to be some payment involved, payment karma, payment forward, payment whatever it is. It's the present where compassion and empathy are best expressed. And anything else turns out to be a promise that you may or may not keep, like your experience. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. The second thing about it that I concluded was, anytime you don't take the present to express it, you haven't missed something for that person. You've missed something for yourself. And I'm going to take your example. You know, I can't talk to you today. Call me. That's not your loss. You may or may not call. You may not look for another way to solve your problem. That's a loss for that person. That's a loss for this person, because they didn't take advantage of the present, that opportunity. So, and it's a good lesson. It was a lesson that I learned, not when I was in high school, later in life, I'm sure, where I learned, and I haven't always been perfect, as I'm often reminded, to make promises rather than making promises, because you can break a promise. It's easy to break a promise. It is not easy to break showing compassion, empathy, gratitude, all the things in the present, in that moment, because that's unforgettable for all the parties involved. Promises are promises to be kept and sometimes broken. And then when they're broken, there's apologies and nobody feels good about it. Do it now, or don't turn it into one of those moments. This isn't a moment for compassion and empathy, or it is, and I'm going to do it now.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's something that you can keep in mind too, is if you know somebody who, you know, you go to the family funeral with them and you say, is there anything I can do to help? And they say, well, no, not right now. Call them in a month, because there's going to be stuff.
Right.
And nobody else is calling in a month from now. Mm-hmm. They all offer at the funeral, what can I do to help? And right then, it's, you know, everybody, there's 20 people saying, you know, what can I do? What can I do? A month from now, they're going to need some help, you know, so reach back out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rather than waiting for them to call, because it's easy to wait. It's easy to wait because the promise was, hey, and then if they do call, there's always the option of, you called on such a bad day, right? I have to pick up my dry cleaning. I won't be able to help you today. Whatever it is. Instead of you going, I'm free today. What do you need? And if then they say, I don't need anything today, but what about tomorrow? Then you say, let's make something tomorrow, you know. But at least you've taken the initiative enough to offer what you can in the way of usefulness, compassion, empathy, you know, whatever it is, however you want to define it, you've done it. And I think that's maybe a third characteristic of that activity of compassion and empathy that makes it real, you know. Mm-hmm. Be in the present, deliver it, and offer it. If you can't, you know, find a substitute, but don't, you know, don't, it's not call me in a month.
Yeah.
It's I can't today. I will call you tomorrow, or I will call you next week or whatever. And then take the action. We had a little conversation today about you calling your insurance company and getting someone who said someone will call you.
Yeah. I'm getting a lot of that.
Which is the least helpful promise.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of
customer support promise you can get. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned to do is I ask a series of questions. Who's going to call me? When are they going to call me? And the answer is, that just comes in time. Well, I'd like to know, when can I expect to call back? Mm-hmm. When will that happen? Mm-hmm. I don't let them get away, because so often they say something like, someone will call you. And they're not responsible for doing anything but writing it on a pink slip and hanging it someplace where, quote, someone, unquote, may or may not see it.
Yeah.
And so I always push it a little bit further. I ask the person's name, because mm-hmm. they never give you their name. Mm. What's your name? What's your phone number? Because I want them to know that if someone doesn't call me, I'm going to call them back. Mm. Right. But it's the nature of that particular beast. That's how they do it. If they feel like someone will call you is a solution to your problem. You know, the phrase, someone will call you, just solve your problem. When in reality, you're no further along than when you took the time to dial that.
Because I got to do it all over again tomorrow now.
You don't dial it anymore, but.
I know. And everything becomes a thing. Mm-hmm. It's because they don't have the compassion and the empathy to make sure mm-hmm. that somebody does call me back, you know?
Well, the other thing too, another way to look at it is ask, what can I do to move this forward?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I come over to the office? Would it be better if I came over to the office? Would it be better if I brought the papers?
I don't want to drive across town.
Know, but you can just get them. It's a way to motivate them into doing something other than saying, making the,
Yeah,
I'm hesitant.
Get you off the phone thing.
I'm hesitant to call it a promise, because it's not even someone will call you. It's not a promise. Yeah. It's an avoidance mechanism. You know, the someone will call you for them is the end of this conversation.
Yeah,
it even bothers me when they say someone will call you and they don't ask me my name and phone number.
Yeah, well, and someone will call you is their answer when you want something, but when it's time to pay the bill, boy, they'll sure call you all right.
Yeah.
So make sure you're not doing that if you're a business owner, because it's not helpful and it's not going to end up in more business in the future.
If you answer a phone and sometime in that phone call, you use the line, someone will call you, that's you've just wasted an opportunity to express compassion and empathy and usefulness and all the things that you could be doing to make that person's life just a little bit better. Because after all, you're on that phone, you're receiving that call because the expectation is you can help. Telling them someone will call you has zero in the way of value when it comes to you helping them.
Yeah. I was reading something on Facebook today that made me very emotional. It was about somebody who was driving a cab. It could have been it could have been an Uber or a Lyft, but he said it was a cab. And he had been called to pick somebody up at their house, and he stopped, he honked the horn, and nobody came out. And so he's like, I'm just going to drive away. And then he thought again, and he's like, no, I'm going to go to the door. So he went to the door and knocked on the door, and it was a little old lady, and she was having trouble with her heavy suitcase. So he helped her take the suitcase out to the car, found out.
She's laughing because this is usually me that's doing this.
She was going to a hospice. And she asked him, would you drive through downtown so I can see some of the buildings that, you know, I worked at and I remember. And he spent 2 hours driving her around on the way to hospice. Didn't charge her. Mm-hmm. He put himself out. You know, he did service for somebody.
He put himself in the present. He could have driven off, right? And then wondered the rest of the week, did I do the right thing? But he put himself in the present. What do you do now? Not what do you do next week or who do you apologize to the week after that. It's he put himself in the present and made it mean something. And for the rest of his life, he's going to remember that moment.
And everybody who reads that story, you know, they can look at themselves and say, did I go the extra mile or did I just tell that person I'm too busy?
So it's funny that you bring this up because I heard a story. I don't know the names. It's got a historical context, and it was about a black man who was sent by his slave owner in the Civil War to act as a pilot in the Charleston Harbor. And his job was to help the Confederates' boats go in and out of Charleston Harbor. And his slave owner was actually he got the money that he did that. Well, at some point he realized that he knew all the signals for leaving Charleston Harbor, and right outside Charleston Harbor, there was a naval blockade, the Union's naval blockade of Charleston Harbor. It's where Fort Sumter is, by the way, where the war started. And so he decided that he was going to bring a bunch of people of other slaves that were doing similar work in a similar way. Masters, their slave owners, were getting paid for the work that they were doing on behalf of the Confederacy. And so one night, he had a big plan. One night, he stole one of their 700-gun frigates and loaded it up with people, made a run for the, and gave all the right signals to get out of Charleston Harbor, made a run for the blockade, and eventually he captained a boat for the Union fighting the South. And was at Fort Sumter when it was recaptured by the Union at Fort Sumter. He went on in life to form his own business. He was a captain, et cetera, saved his money, became a politician, was elected to the House of Representatives and then to the United States Senate. He eventually earned enough money in all of this that he went back and he bought the house that was owned by his slave master. Bought that house, mm-hmm. Raised his family in it. And one day he came outside, and the widow of the slave master was standing there with her bag, and she had dementia. And he brought her into his house, and he took care of her the rest of her life. That man has history. That man has a story. And he has a story because his life was made of doing things in the present that were good for others. That's what happened to your friend to pick up that little old lady.
Yeah.
It was taking advantage of the present.
Yep. Not worrying about the future and, you know,
How much is it going to cost? How much gas am I going to waste? What am I going to have to do at the end of the month when I've got to look at my bills? And
because his values were more about helping people than they were about making money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what you can do in the present. Take advantage of it. It's always there. It's always staring you in the face. All you have to do is make a decision that you're doing something about it, because most of the time we don't. We're too busy to even notice. No. Well, compassion and empathy was the theme of that chapter, and you've done a really good job of bringing that out.
I think so. I think we had some good stories.
Yep.
So, all right. We'll be back again next week with chapter 17, where we'll continue the story of what happens once Miguel gets inside the house with Lizette and how that goes. Make sure you tune in for that. And if you haven't yet, if you've missed any of the chapters, make sure you go back and check those out. Each week is a new theme, and we have different stories to support each theme. So hope that you'll go back and listen to those that you may have missed.
Or better yet, go to Amazon and buy the book.
That too, but we tell the stories that aren't in the book. So also share this with family and friends, and let them know that, you know, there's something here. There's compassion, there's empathy, there's community, and stories.
Good stories.
Yeah.
Stories that bring tears to your eyes.
Definitely. And we'll see you again next week. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to Our Story, Your Story. We hope you enjoyed hearing our stories and those of our guests. We invite you to share your own stories with us by emailing us at stories@agkmedia.studio. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. Until next time, keep telling your story, because your story matters.